Welcome to Something Rhymes with Purple, live from Chichester.
Thank you for joining us. So we're coming to the end of 2021 and we thought we would go all the way back to 1921 to dig in to the fantastic slang and linguistic creations of the 1920s. It was, as you will see, Jazz, I think, a really fertile time for new words and phrases.
Good. That are still around today?
That are still around today,
well,
yes.
Well, some of them, of course, won't seem as old to me as they do to you. Because I am a little bit older than you. I was telling the audience before we pressed the button that says record for our podcast that I first came to this theatre, because we're giving this live podcast from the Chichester Festival Theatre in Sussex, that was founded at the beginning of the 1960s by Sir Laurence Olivier. And I was a schoolboy nearby and came to all the early productions here. And I realised that 1961 is now 60 years ago. And you're going to talk about words from the 1920s, that when 1961 was only 40 years before.
Yeah.
So this old-fashioned lingo is going to seem like sort of modern jargon to me. But let's cope with it. Give us some examples of the kind of language you're talking about.
OK, so I think what you will mostly find is a real sense of zest and zing and a sort of fervour for life, really, because obviously this is a post-war period, almost post-war hedonism is what you'll feel now. New dances, there was the black bottom, for example, the Charleston, of course, the camel walk, the heebie-jeebies, which began as a dance.
Hello, I've heard of the black bottom. I've heard of the Charleston, I've not heard of the other two. What are the other two?
Okay, so there's the camel walk.
The camel walk? Gives you the hump. Thank you.
The heebie-jeebies?
I've not heard of the heebie-jeebies either.
Okay, well, you've heard of having the heebie-jeebies.
Yes.
Yes.
What's the origin of that?
The having the heebie-jeebies, we actually don't know. It's origin unknown in the dictionary, but it's just one of... You do remember all those wonderful rhyming reduplicative compounds, is what we call them. Like shilly-shally, willy-nilly.
Rhyming dilly, duplicative compounds.
Dally, and yes, they're not always rhyming, because with things like dilly-dally, do you remember the rule of ablaut reduplication?
No.
Okay.
No, we're not familiar. Some people taking A-level at the back, maybe, but I'm not. Explain that to me.
Well, the thing about my job, sorry, I appreciate it, I've got my back to you here, I'm sorry. The thing about my job is that it is just the most brilliant gig that you can possibly find, but it involves the worst kind of terminology in terms of putting people off. So the wonderful databases that we look at all the time, which we've got text messages, scholarly journals, tabloid newspapers, transcripts of conversations on the street, they're called corpora.
What are they called?
Corpora.
Corpora.
Plural of corpus, Anyway, the ablaut reduplication rule, and we don't have many rules in English, is all about sound. So this is why you don't wear flip-flops, remember, or dally-dilly, or eat a cat kit, or play pong-ping.
Oh, there's a reason it's flip-flops, not flop-flips.
Yeah, it's a sound thing. That is slightly involved in the heebie-jeebies thing, if there was a switch.
Because
you're
absolutely right, it should be, actually, flop-flip, shouldn't it? Because it goes flop-flip. It doesn't go flip-flop, it goes flop-flip. How intriguing.
Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in.
but it is, and the heebie-jeebies is like that.
Sort of like that. I mean, that is a rhyming with duplicative compounds, so you don't have a vowel shift in that one. Lots of new drinks. So yep. Gimlets. Have you had a gimlet?
Yes, I've heard of a gimlet.
That's gin and lime juice.
Gin and lime juice.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think the gimlet, the tool, is a boring tool, isn't it? So maybe it bores into you and just knocks you over.
It's a boring drink as well, as I recall.
Cocktail bars, that first mention of a cocktail bar is 1926.
Hold on, was the cocktail invented in the 20s as well?
No, so the cocktail itself, people were drinking a long time before, but the first instance of a cocktail bar that you can find in the OED is in 1926. Do you remember, cocktail is a real etymological mystery, we don't quite know, but our nearest and best guess is that it comes from the little rooster feathers that people used to put in the fashionable drinks, literally the tail of a cockerel, not a real one, but...
It's worth saying this, actually. It's constantly amazing to me how many words we can't trace back.
Mm.
Even the simple word, you give me often this example, is it dog?
Dog.
We don't know the origin, the first usage of dog, how dogs We know about canine and hound, but we can't create the origin of dog. So similarly with cocktail. Okay.
Yes, came out of nowhere. Dog.
Give us some more.
So then personal appearance. So this was a time, as I say, of just trying to introduce some razzmatazz into life. So you will find the shingle, which was a very cool haircut, which I think involved various layers, hence shingles on the back. The Eton crop. As well.
Can I say something? Yes. How strange that they should call a... I mean, shingles is such an unpleasant thing. What kind of a hairdresser would say to... Madam, would you like the shingles? I don't think so. How strange.
They should have called it herpes zoster.
Herpes zoster?
Yeah.
Is that another name for the shingles?
Yes. But these shingles are the roof shingles.
Very good.
I think is the idea. Plus fours, have you ever worn a pair of plus fours?
In my dreams.
Okay.
I have a fantasy life as being a character out of P.G. Woodhouse, in which I would wear plus fours. Go on.
I can imagine.
Why are they called plus fours?
Do you know, I actually don't know the answer to that. This is a time when I should be looking it up in the OED, as I would in the podcast. Why would they be called plus fours?
Anyone here know? I think it's something to do with the amount of material used, because there are plus twos as well, aren't there? And then plus fours, I think it's an excess of, it's how they are shaped and cut.
Billowing material.
Yep.
Yeah. Sweatshirt, the first sweatshirt, 1929.
Goodness.
Yeah. And T-shirt, 1920. But I think in some ways, 1920s was also the time when people really kind of embraced the idea of modernity as opposed to kind of, you know, Victorian, pre-modern Victorian ways. So you will find things like the fridge, the first fridge in 1926, which was originally spelled frig. F-R-I-G, which clearly is not great. So that was the first abbreviation for a fridge. And do you know why there's a D in fridge?
Tell us.
Because of the incredibly popular US brand Frigidaire. And that is why people put the D in.
So a fridge is an abbreviation of refrigerator. So that's the origin of it,
yes.
A refrigerator. And that comes way before the 1920s.
Before. Yes.
But fridges, electric fridges, were pioneered in the 1920s.
That was when Frigidaire became very, very popular.
And Frigidaire gives you fridge.
That is...
Very good.
Yeah, that
Go
is
on.
The origin of that. The media, 1923 as well. But possibly the best thing of all, if I had to ask you what invention you... Well, actually, you could do without it. It's just a faff. The zip. The zip came about in the 1920s. Yeah. And do you know why it's called the zip?
Nope.
It's because it goes zip. Genuinely.
Is that genuinely how got his name?
Yes.
It's Zip.
Yes.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to know Dame Barbara Cartland. Do you remember Barbara? Do you know what I mean by Barbara Cartland?
Where are we going with zips on this one?
Barbara Cartland was a romantic novelist. And
she was very pink.
She loved the colour pink. She always wore pink. I remember going to interview her at her house in Hatfield in Hertfordshire. And it was a radio interview, and she sat in her chair like this, and just as the interview was about to begin, she leant to the floor and pressed a button, and she was suffused in pink light. She suddenly looked like a Christmas tree. And I said, I'm so sorry, Dame Barbara, this is merely a radio interview. And she said, it's a performance all the same. And she gave a marvellous performance, but she told me that she introduced, when the zip was introduced in the 1920s, she was a 1920s figure, she thought the zips were hugely useful and wanted to have them in clothes. And she was a friend of Lord Mountbatten of Burma. Do you remember him? Louis Mountbatten.
This is Prince Charles's favourite relative.
Well, Prince Charles's great uncle.
Great
right.
uncle, yeah.
The uncle of the Duke of Edinburgh. Lord Mountbatten of Burma. He pioneered the use of zip fasteners for fly buttons. In trousers, until he made them popular and fashionable, it was always buttons.
Mm.
I don't know, why are they called flies?
I think they're called flies because otherwise everything flies open. I think that's right.
Is that for real?
Yes.
Flies on trousers are called flies because things might otherwise fly out unless you did them up. They used to be buttons, but from the 1930s onwards, the zip fastener was used increasingly in trousers, made fashionable first by Lord Mountbatten, who then persuaded the Prince of Wales, Edward VIII, to also have zips instead of fly buttons. And that's how it became acceptable for a gentleman to have a zip fastener in his flies instead of buttons. Just showing okay. I know some
very
things
interesting.
Too. Go on.
Not related to the zip code in America, which I think is an acronym for zone implementation protocol or something like that. Yeah, not related.
The zip code.
And also lots and lots of words for complete bunkum or baloney. Ah. So applesauce is one of my favourites.
As I think applesauce is used by P.G. Woodhouse. Oh, a lot of applesauce. What is the origin of that?
I think it's genuinely just used because food is often used as a kind of metaphor for a mishmash of stuff. So flummery used to be a type of pudding. Balderdash was a really unappetizing concoction of alcohol, milk. I think they literally used to put a dead cockerel in there as well. I know it was horrible. That was balderdash. So a lot of similar ideas for, a whole mishmash, as I say, of food.
Applesauce, mm-hmm. bologna. Mm-hmm. That's a kind of food too, isn't it?
Bologna is a sausage. So it comes from Bologna sausage, yeah.
Oh, it comes from Bologna, the place.
Yes.
So it's a load of bologna. It means a load of Bologna sausage.
Yes.
Very good. Bunkum?
So bunkum comes from... It's actually earlier, I think, and it comes from a debate in the US Congress when a politician who was representing, it was a really important debate about whether or not to admit states, slavery, supporting states into the Union. So very, very serious. And I can't remember his name, but he represented Buncombe County. And he stood up and essentially he just wanted to keep the debate running and just keep talking so that he would delay a vote, basically, because he was pro-slavery. And he talked and he talked and he talked, and all his colleagues begged him to desist and to sit down. And he said, no, I shall not. I am speaking for Buncombe County. And so Buncombe became a byword for absolute nonsense.
Buncombe County, yes. Yeah. What is that word when you speak
yes.
in a debate?
Everyone
you filibuster.
Know, yeah. Filibuster,
you
thank
filibuster.
You.
Filibuster. So you could be speaking That's Buncombe when you're filibustering.
Called. Yes.
What is the origin of filibuster?
Filibuster, I'm going to look up, but I think it might come from French. Do you know, I think I might have the OED on here.
Good.
So you keep talking, no pressure.
Well, I'll tell you this. I wrote a biography of the Duke of Edinburgh, and because I happened to know him through a charity in which I was involved, which was his favourite charity, the National Playing Fields Association. And he had in his library a book about the Mountbatten family, which had been called Manifest Destiny, A History of the Mountbattens. And because of the way people write about the royal family, I opened this book and saw that the Duke of Edinburgh had corrected the title, which was Manifest Destiny, Story of the Mountbatten Family. He'd corrected the title, he crossed out the word destiny and put Buncombe. So it read Manifest Buncombe. Yeah. That's what he thought about people who write books about the royal family.
I found it. So, yes, from the French filibustier, but it was actually originally from Spanish before then. First applied to pirates who pillaged the Spanish colonies in the West Indies. And so I guess the idea was of sabotaging proceedings, so piracy of proceedings in a way, because you're taking hold of it.
What about hokum?
Hokum.
Is that a 20s word?
Yeah, hokum began as, it's a riff on hocus pocus, which was part of a sham Latin formula used by magicians in, I'm trying to get back to
Oh, it's to make it sound magical.
To make it sound magical.
It doesn't
magical.
Mean anything, hocus pocus.
Exactly.
I'm from the sooty generation, izzy wizzy, let's get busy. But hocus pocus gives
pocus
you hokum.
Gives us hokum, yeah. Exactly. So lots and lots of ones for complete rubbish. Also, I mentioned alcohol. So the temperance movement obviously was coming into its prime here. So people were literally on the wagon, which was meant on the water wagon. So they would go around proclaiming that they were abstaining from alcohol.
This is because, a good little history here, this is because in the 1920s in America, in fact before then, in the teens of the century, prohibition was being introduced.
It's actually ratified in 1920.
And it grows and grows.
Yes.
So prohibition in every state. And that's when they have speakeasies.
Speakeasies.
Called a speakeasy for what reason?
Speakeasies because you could speak freely, essentially, and drink at the same time.
You could behave as you want to do in the speakeasy.
Exactly. And we also have bootlegged alcohol. Bootlegged is the idea is that smugglers were literally hiding alcohol down their boots. Oh. I know, it's very strange, but that's the idea of bootlegging. Back to alcohol, we have hooch. Have you ever tried hooch?
Hooch! No, I don't drink alcohol. I'm high enough on the air I breathe in Chichester. But now, hooch, what is the origin of hooch?
Hooch. So hooch has got a lovely origin. So it's a shortening of Hoochinoo, which was the name of an Alaskan, I mean, it's a corruption of the name of an Alaskan people. And when people first went over there, when non-Indigenous people first went over there, they just used to find all the inhabitants completely drunk. And so they thought there was absolutely no point in staying here or doing any work with the people at all because they're just always falling over. And it turns out they were drinking their own illicitly made local alcohol, which was incredibly potent. And so Hoochinoo was...
Hoochinoo.
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 Which I think was Hootsnoo or something in the Alaskan Indian people.
So it's a name from an Indigenous language.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Any more alcohol?
No, just those amazing cocktails that, as I say, first began to
screwdriver. The screwdriver, that's orange juice and vodka, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Martini, well, no, that's the name of a brand, isn't it? Martini.
Yes. Okay. Don't get me, I'm not very good with cocktails.
No, I noticed that evening. What about, is it a Fall Guy? I feel a Fall Guy is a 1920s
word. Yes, so Flicks. I think Flicks was first recorded for the cinema in the 1920s.
Because so the flickering pictures.
Flickering pictures, yeah. And silver screen. Yeah, the silver screen was so called because it had a metallic, the film had a metallic silver coating to sort of improve the quality of it, so hence the silver screen. So a Fall Guy or a scapegoat, essentially. So somebody who would take the fall for you is the idea for a Fall Guy. Do you remember scapegoat?
I know the word scapegoat, but I didn't know the origin.
Okay, so scapegoat, that actually goes back to the Bible, and it was an scapegoat. And essentially, the custom was to take two goats, and on one of the goats, all the sins of the people would be figuratively laid upon it, and it would be sacrificed, and the other would be sent off and banished into exile,
yes,
into the desert. But it escaped death, so it was the scapegoat.
There are stories in the Old Testament that tell of this ritual that there was. So that's what a scapegoat is.
Scapegoat.
And a Fall Guy is a 1920s phrase for a scapegoat.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And also, do you know the astronaut is first mentioned in the 1920s, even though man didn't go into space until the 60s. So thanks to people predicting it and science fiction, etc., astronaut, which has got the most beautiful origin, the Greek for star sailor, sailor of the stars.
Astronaut, of course. Yeah. Naut as in nautical. Astro as in the stars.
Yeah.
So a sailor through the stars is an astronaut.
It's an astronaut.
Conceived in the 1920s, when also the robot as a word was introduced for that play, Rossum's Universal Robots, R-U-R, by the Capek brothers.
The Capek, the Czech, exactly.
Yeah, I do remember some of the things you tell me.
No, that's brilliant. Also, I need to tell you about... now, have you heard of this? This was quite new to me, even though I've studied BBC English and I've studied... the BBC have a pronunciation unit which tells anybody who works within the organisation how to pronounce things. So the latest COVID variant, for example, they will have said this is exactly how you...
Omicron.
Omicron.
I thought it should have been Epsilon, because that's the letter after Delta in the Greek alphabet. But I read today there are certain letters they're avoiding, some because they may apparently have cultural references in other languages that are not comfortable.
Okay.
And they need to have it a letter that can be easily visualised,
which
is why they've jumped to Omicron and left out other letters. Because Omicron, I think, is the Greek for O.
Yeah, little O. It means little O. Yeah,
little O.
So it's the 15th letter. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Anyway, so the BBC have this pronunciation unit, but I only recently discovered that there was, in the 1920s, there was something called the BBC Advisory Committee on Spoken English, and George Bernard Shaw was at its helm. So you probably know more about this, Giles, than me, not that you were there. not quite.
I not did quite. Know a man who knew Bernard Shaw. I just say that in case there are some Bernard Shaw enthusiasts here. During the interval, I will shake your hand, and then you'll be shaking the hand that shook the hand that wrote St. Joan. Yeah. Susie can't offer you that.
No. I really can't. Anyway, so they were tasked with coming up with a verbal style guide, so much as the pronunciation unit does now. So that was absolutely fine. And they set the standard pronunciation for things like margarine. They also came up with new words themselves. So, for example, one of the challenges was how to come up with the equivalent of a wireless listener for people who were watching the television. And lots of suggestions came up, like a seer, an opsy viewer, a televiewer, And lots of suggestions. Anyway, they chose Televiewer, T-E-L-E, viewer, but the telly eventually dropped off and they simply called them viewer. But that was their invention.
That's intriguing, because when the radio, the wireless arrived, people automatically said, you are a listener, you are listening to the wireless, therefore you are a listener. But when the television came along, they weren't sure what to call us.
Mm.
So it could have been Telesina.
Yeah, could have been.
Or Telesia.
Telesia. Yeah.
But it ended up as Televiewer, and then it becomes viewer, the viewer.
Simply.
We the viewers.
I mean, we just don't really think about that. But the other thing that they did is they got rid of the gyratory circus, which became the roundabout. So that was a BBC decision. But this is the thing.
Hold on. Roundabouts, because this is so extraordinary, you've got to absorb it. Roundabouts were to be called gyratory circuses.
They were already called gyratory circuses for a very long time.
So you go left to the gyratory circus.
Yes.
No wonder it didn't catch on. And the BBC, somebody at the BBC pronunciation unit said, that won't do, we must come up with something simpler.
Yes, but they went a bit rogue. So this was a surprise for me. They decided that traffic lights should be called stop and goes. For example, they decided that Christmas festivities should be called Yulery.
Yulery?
Yulery. And that Christmas itself might be called Yulery. And clearly, people at the BBC, the bosses, got a little bit worried because they thought, actually, you're just going to embarrass us with this. You've got to stop. So it was abandoned. It was just split up, the committee, because they were actually becoming power hungry and power happy.
What this was, the French have a council, don't they?
Academy, yeah.
An academy,
yeah,
that decides what words are acceptable. And this,
yeah,
was like creating an English version of it.
Yeah.
And they got somebody like Bernard Shaw, who had lots of opinions and was probably the most famous writer of English,
yeah,
though an Irishman.
Lady Cynthia Asquith. Yeah.
Yeah. They all sat on this committee having these grand ideas and then were abandoned. I'm not surprised. Eulery. That would not catch on.
No.
That's wonderful.
It's strange, isn't it? But yes, but at this time, this is to show that, I suppose, motor cars, etc., were becoming increasingly popular, which is why they needed to think about things like traffic lights and gyratory circuses, etc. But yeah, they gave us the roundabout.
Hello, it's me, Jamie Lang, and I've got a new podcast, and this time there are no gimmicks. It's just great company. Because the thing is, I realize the reason I love podcasts so much is because they're a great way to connect with people.
Hello, I'm Youngblood.
Joe Brand.
I'm Paloma Faith.
Jay Blades.
Elizabeth Day.
Zara Larson. Casper
Lee. And I'm Great Company.
Great Company.
Great Company.
Great Company.
Apparently.
It's Great Company with me, Jamie Lang. Coming Wednesday, the 27th of March.
In 2007... TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Do you know what you are, Susie Dent, as far as language is concerned? You're the real McCoy.
Oh.
And I say that because I have a feeling that could be... Is it an 1880s expression or is it later than that?
No, that is this decade.
The real McCoy,
yeah,
is only 100 years old.
Yeah.
And was there a real McCoy?
Well, this is another one where there are lots and lots of people contesting for the right to be the real McCoy. So there was a boxer called Kid McCoy who he was so successful that there were lots of imitations of him up and down the land. And so he called himself the real Kid, the real McCoy. But there was also a whiskey distillers, a whiskey makers in Scotland called Mackay, and they had an advertising slogan which was, a drop of the real Mackay, that's terrible, but the real Mackay was what was on the ad, and we think that everything was kind of conflated in people's minds and the real Mackay became the real McCoy.
That still exists, doesn't it? White and Mackay.
It's still, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is, okay. Still, it's still a whiskey.
Okay.
So the real McCoy was really the real Mackay.
The real Mackay.
Meaning the original whiskey.
The one and only.
The real Mackay.
Exactly.
Okay, there's one more before we invite questions and contributions from the crowd, because I think this does come from 100 years ago. Blowing a raspberry.
Blowing a raspberry is actually earlier.
Oh.
But I think this was a suggestion by our producer Lawrence, just because he's tickled by this one. Does anyone know where blowing a raspberry comes from? Yes.
Cockney rhymings. Thank you, sir. You can meet Susie in the interval.
No one's going to answer anymore if you threaten that. Yes, blowing a raspberry tart, fart. Yeah. Because that's the sound you make. That's blowing a raspberry, isn't it?
Do that again, it's quite exciting.
You usually do it on a baby's tummy, don't you? I can't do it. That doesn't really sound like a raspberry tart, but... Anyway.
It does, it sounds a bit.
Okay.
It's lovely. Well done. So that's the origin of blowing a raspberry.
Yeah.
And when did it start? When did
people... I think that is at least 20 years earlier. And in fact, speakeasies we've talked about. Speakeasies were 1880. 1881 is the first instance of a speakeasy. So they were around too, but obviously during Prohibition, really came to the fore.
Good. Mm. Well, there. That's the sort of... I mean, I think Susie Dent is amazing that she knows things that the rest of us don't know.
No, wait,
the challenge for us is to remember. No, it is. I think we probably will remember about blowing a raspberry. Can I just
throw in a couple more?
Real, please.
That I had on my list, because I thought, you know, it's just always incredible how, often how recent things are, but also how old things are. So celeb, for example, the first mention of celeb was just before 1920, it was 1919. But also recycling, 1926. Microclimate as well, 1925. So they have been around for a very,
nothing,
very long time.
Put that in your pipe, Greta. honestly. Do you know what this is, Susie?
No.
It's a microwave. You can see the level at which we're both playing this. I mean, she's at the high end, but somebody's got to be down in the gutter. That's lovely.
Yeah.
Any more?
It is nice. No, just, I mean, I mentioned this sort of sci-fi thing. So to go with astronaut, you have a rocket ship and a space suit as well. So people were incredibly prescient in these days. But I also love the fact that this was a time of exuberance. And in fact, we have an email from a listener who wants to know about one particular thing, and that's the bee's knees.
Oh, this is a listener who's written to us they were born in the Netherlands. The great joy of something rhymes with purple, so called because something does rhyme with purple.
Oh, not me. Herple.
Herple means to walk with a limp.
Yes.
We have listeners, purple people all over the world, and this person was born in the Netherlands but now lives in London.
Yeah, Anke van Lenteren.
Yeah.
Great name.
And what is their question?
Okay. As a beekeeper, says Anka, I am really intrigued by expressions with the word bee in them. I've asked many American friends for the origin of spelling bee, for instance, and have never had a satisfactory answer. Oh. She's thinking quilting bees and knitting bees and also the bee's knees. She'd love to know after years and years of wondering.
Good. That's Anka, who is now living in Sweden. What is the answer?
I love the way you said that. Sweden?
Sweden.
So the answer, well, first of all, the sewing bee, that is purely because, and I think Anke probably had an inkling of this, it's because of the bee's very social nature. So it is basically the idea of people coming together in a colony, if you like, or in a, you know, just as a get-together. So it's the social aspect. To go in a bee line is because of the insect's tendency to go straight in a straight line from, you know, wherever it's gathering its food back to its hive. And the bee's knees, this was the time when, particularly in North America, people were incredibly creative when it comes to describing what is the acme of excellence. So the bee's knees, no one knows why it's the bee's knees. It was originally used in English to mean something incredibly small, because what could be smaller than a bee's knee? But a bit like the dog's bollocks, actually, and I'm sorry to use that word again, it kind of shifted its meaning. So the dog's bollocks, do you remember,
began... Is a printer's mark.
Printer's mark for the colon dash, because that's what it looks like.
Hold on. We're not as quick as you. Visualise it, everybody. The dog's bollocks, a colon and
dash.
A colon and a dash. Yes, I see what you mean.
Mm. Yes.
Depends how you look at it, of course. Whether your dog is lying on its side or standing upright. Yeah, exactly. Very good.
Okay. But because of this formula, it then shifted its meaning to mean something that was absolutely excellent. And the same with the bee's knees. And there were so many others that sadly haven't made it. Well, the cat's whiskers have. And actually, there's one suggestion that the whiskers are the aerials, the sort of small aerials that you will find on early transmitters that were called the cat's whiskers. But you also had the kipper's knickers. The elephant's adenoids, and a whole raft of similar formulations. But the bee's knees, as I say, began much earlier than the 20s to mean something very, very tiny, but in the 20s meant the best of all.
Does anybody have a question that they would like to put to Susie, or indeed to me, about words from the 1920s, or indeed words from this part of the world? We're here in Sussex. Feel free to call out at this stage. Oh, yes, hello? Who? Grockle? Grockle. Are you clearing your throat, or is this a question? I think the lady is simply saying grockle.
Yes.
Grockle.
For a tourist. I thought you called them Emmets here, no? You call them grockles, okay. The idea of a grockle, I think, began in a comic book. Again, if you look it up, it will say origin unknown, but I think it was the name of characters in a comic. But what, and I think they must have been quite annoying, because I know grockle is, it's kind of semi-affectionate, isn't it? My dad lives in South Devon, and will sort of say, oh, all the grockles coming here again. Whereas in Cornwall, I think it's the Emmets. But yes, that's the best guess that we have, is that it comes from a comic. But I was going to ask what you call bumblebees here, or even ladybirds, because I think, do you have Bishy Barney Bee here? No.
Okay,
fair enough.
An emphatic no. No, okay. No, no.
Or woodlice, do you have a nice thing for woodlice? Cheesy logs. It's so fascinating how different dialects collect around certain things. And for some reason, woodlice attract a whole lexicon.
Woodlice?
Yes.
And what are they called?
Cheesy logs, chuggy pigs. All sorts of fascinating words. Grammar sows. But pigs come into it very, very often. But did you say cheesy logs? Yes, Granny Grudger. I've heard that as well.
What was that one? Repeat it for
Granny
us.
Granny Grudger.
Granny Grudger.
Yeah. There's some very, very amazing words for woodlice.
Have you got three special words for us?
I do.
Because what we do on the podcast every week, those of you who are new to it, is that in order to... It pays to increase your word power. Language is power. The greater your vocabulary, the better life you have. That's our view. And every week, Susie introduces us to three interesting words. And you've got three to give us. And what's the idea? What's the game you want to play with us?
People have already submitted their own definition of the trio
Ooh.
Of words
Ooh.
That I had posted. The first one was petitos or petitos.
Petitos?
Yes.
How do you spell that?
So that is petit, as in French for small, and then toes.
T-O-E-S. Petitos.
And we have had... lots and lots of lovely entries, but these are the three that we've picked. So this is from Paul Newsham from Fareham. When a domestic animal's toes swell to resemble breasts. Okay.
Okay. We're not coming here again. Okay,
I'm apologise for the next one as well. This is for Carolyn Sims Evans from Angmering. Angmering is lovely. Miniature silk frilly undergarments you put in each individual toe before a sock or tights. Pity toes.
Oh, okay. I rather like that to make it more comfortable. Little sort of undergarments, then you pull your socks or tights on afterwards.
Yeah.
Pity toes. I like that.
This is my favourite. This is from Paul Goddard. From Crowborough. This word describes the first thing that a midwife sees during a breech birth.
Oh. That's charming.
I love that.
And given the state of midwifery in this country, they're having to import French midwives now. It's marvellous.
I'll tell you what they are, really.
This is for real. What are they?
This is for real. Pig's trotters served as a delicacy.
Petitos are pig's trotters served as a delicacy.
I'm a celebrity all over again. So I'm definitely with Paul's version there. The next word was a skimmington.
A skimmington.
A skimmington. Okay, Stephen Clark from Fareham. A small, close-minded, miserly, fat-free town. That's brilliant. I like that. This is also great. Craig, is it Gershater? Yes, from Chichester itself. The Prime Minister, Skimmington, is the Prime Minister's approach to detailed analysis or delicate diplomacy.
Great.
Okay, and this is from Paul Comerford from Nutbourne. the ancient Celtic sport of underarm skimming of frozen cowpats over dew ponds in the winter solstice gave rise to its centre being based in a new town of Skimmington. Pursuers of this sport were hence known as Skimmingtons.
That's oh, brilliant. Excellent. These are brilliant. What a clever audience.
They are. What do you reckon? I think it's got to be the PM, no?
Well, what's the truth?
Oh, that's true. It's not the truth. This is a really strange one. It was actually a procession that was used to make an example of a nagging wife. So...
Explain.
Well, that's as much as I know.
A procession?
It's a really obscure word, yes.
A
procession that was used to humiliate a wife.
Oh, so like putting in a scolding tools.
A scold, exactly.
You would take her out on a skimmington.
On a skimmington. Not very nice. But I just to tell you again, the Prime Minister's approach to detailed analysis or delicate diplomacy is brilliant. And finally, a gasconade.
A gasconade?
Yes.
Okay.
Right, gasconade. This is from Cordulaxel Murring from Emsworth. To go and panic buy fuel. Very good. This is from Craig, again, Craig Gershitter from Chichester. The aftermath of consuming excessive Brussels sprouts for Christmas dinner. And this is from Jess Golf from Waterlooville. Amazing town names. When Gaston leans into his staggering hubris and attempts to serenade Belle with a song on how great he is, that is a gasconade.
Oh.
Which is brilliant. Gosh, I don't know, which one should we go for?
Well, we're going to go for the one that's real.
It's simply also because it's got a great name. It just would make the most amazing anagram. Cordulaxel, if I pronounce that properly. Yeah, Cordulaxel Murring. From Emsworth to go and panic buy fuel. I think that's a gasconade.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, well done. The truth is, and again, you might want to make this have a topical reference if you wanted to, extravagant boasting and strutting about.
Oh, I like that.
That's a gasconade.
A gasconade. Well, it sounds like it, a gasconade.
Exactly.
Extravagant boasting and strutting. Was that all three? We've done three?
That is three.
Well done. So it's time for my poem. It's by Leigh Hunt, who lived quite a while ago, 1784 to 1859. And I bet you know this poem, but it's an enchanting poem. And if you want to learn a poem by heart, this is a good one to start with because it's quite short. Jenny, and there's several people I signed books for earlier. I put Jenny because that was their name. And for some of the books, people asked me when I signed it not to put my own name, but to put J.K. Rowling because it might be worth more on eBay. We're not proud. That's the point I'm making. But this is a lovely poem. Jenny kissed me when we met, jumping from the chair she sat in. Time, you thief, who love to get sweets into your list, put that in. Say I'm weary, say I'm sad, say that health and wealth have missed me. Say I'm growing old, but add, Jenny kissed me. Aww.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.